Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. My name is Robert Morrison. I'm a contributor at ninernoise.com, and here with me, associate editor, ninernoise.com, Peter Panacy. Peter, how's it going, man?
It's going good. You know, the NFL draft is over. You know, this entire like few day period, I was trying to think what it might be like as far as what we do and in our own experience of it. And the thing I came up with was, it's like a wedding. You know, you're looking forward to it. You're getting excited for it. You can't wait. You're doing all this planning, you know, you're coming up with your lists, right? Like, okay, well, the list and who, and maybe this person, maybe not. Doing scouting reports on your parents and family and everything. And then you get there and you're just like, whew, okay, I just want this to be over. And it's finally over and you're relieved. You're like, I'm just glad it's done. I'm just glad it's done.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
That tracks. I was guilty of saying I'm just waiting for it to be over thing more than once during the process leading into my own wedding. I got yelled at by other people for saying that a couple of times. You're like, what's wrong with you? Like, you should just enjoy it. I'm like, okay. but anyway, that's neither here nor there. So yeah, as you say, the draft is over, and it is one of those things, very like a lot of buildup, and then it seems to just kind of fly through over the course of basically like what, 2 days when it's all said and done in total. In terms of, I know it takes place over 3 days, but you know, it's a couple hours on Thursday night, a couple hours on Friday night, that sort of thing. And I think made even more so by how kind of uneventful it was for the 49ers. You know, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have been pretty like mover and shaker types in the draft from like day one, when they made that trade with the was it the Bears on their very first draft, and now they didn't trade anybody or trade anything during the entirety of the 2022 NFL draft, which I thought was very interesting. I kept kind of waiting for like something to happen, and they were just sort of just content to kind of sit back and let the draft come to them, which was a different strategy for this team. And you got to wonder if maybe where they see the roster probably has something to do with that a little bit, where they don't feel like they need to be as aggressive in a lot of cases. But we can talk about that as we work through it. But do you have any sort of general thoughts about how the draft went before we get into individual players and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of spot on with the feeling of it. And you know, this part of it also has to reflect on this year's draft too. There weren't too many right out of the gate blue chip prospect, this guy is going to be a stud at the NFL level. Like, no Nick Bosa coming out, right?
Right.
None of that. There was nobody who really stood out that way, but it was a deep draft. A lot of good players, you know, and they're not the elite types or whatever, but just a lot of good players. And really, once you got after the top 10, 15 picks, it was anybody's guess. I mean, you saw that there were guys who were projected to be round one players falling into round three, guys from round four being projected there, falling out of the draft entirely. And I know it's like that every year, but this year just felt really similar to that. So you know, for the 49ers context, they obviously don't have a ton of roster spots available. You know, there's just not a lot of room. It's still a playoff caliber team. I know there's needs there and there's concerns, but not a lot of room. And stockpiling picks isn't really going to get you anywhere. So you're not going to trade down necessarily. Like, what are you going to do with those extra picks? There's going to be guys that you're probably going to have to cut anyway. And you don't really need to trade up, especially if in those middle rounds, which where, you know, the 49ers had the bulk of their selections, you're going to get okay talent. Like, you're going to get good talent. Maybe it's not great, but it will help. So, it was kind of lackluster. It was a very uneventful draft. And yeah. There's no big blockbuster moves that happened. And I guess I'll be thankful of it. Yeah, in this particular context.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and even just across the board, I mean, all you have to do is say one quarterback was taken in the first two rounds. Is that right? And that tells you all you need to know, right? About the quality of the draft, at least at that position, or how the teams felt about that. It was just sort of bizarre, especially like I think the weirdest move, like in the first round for me was when the Lions made that big trade to move back into the top half of the first round. And everybody's like, oh, are they getting a quarterback to replace Jared Goff? And no, they picked up a wide receiver, which was like very odd, but I guess a move that they felt they needed to make. It's just, that tells you all you need to know about the quality of certain positions and all that sort of thing. But that's, again, a sort of wider spread type of situation. But from the 49ers perspective, as far as the first round was concerned, it was kind of a no-go, right? Because no first round pick for 2022 or 2023 at this particular juncture. Of course, all the conversation around the first round and the 49ers had to do with, are they going to trade Deebo Samuel? And if they do, what in addition to a first round pick, because that seemed to be like the starting point for the conversation, would they get? Seemed like they didn't really get much of anything. There were reports, I think, about the Jets offered maybe 10 and one other pick, and they wanted to do a pick swap on the second pick, which seemed really strange. And the Lions might have offered a first and a third, and the first was not number two overall. Let's just say that. And so the Niners decided to move on and to move on from those trades and keep Deebo Samuel where he is. And we'll see what happens with that. I'm sure that will be a conversation that we'll have frequently throughout the next couple of weeks as they begin to try to repair whatever it is that the issue was there. Were you surprised to see it go down that way in the end?
You know, I won't say I was surprised, but I guess I was just nervous. I'll call it that way.
Yeah.
So there were really strong arguments to be made on both sides of the coin, right? As far as Deebo Samuel being traded, again, like, you could see a team just blowing away the Niners with a big deal, you know, and we mentioned this on the last podcast. It was like, well, what would it take? And it's like, okay, well, what if it's a can't refuse deal? And the 49ers would certainly entertain one if it was just, hey, you're talking multiple first round picks, you mid round picks in there. And maybe the 49ers have to just bite and say, hey, yeah, we can't turn that down. That's amazing. And especially a lot of the reports on that happening. But then, of course, when you got to the, you know, the day of the draft and hearing what NFL Network's Ian Rappaport was saying, and he was literally saying, you know, there's really not a lot of movement on this, and you're kind of running out of time for something to happen. Like, you saw when AJ Brown got moved from the Titans to the Eagles, literally within minutes of that news being broke, and then the trade going down, you found out that he was getting his contract extension signed. And so Rappaport's early report from the day made sense. But, you know, the one reason why it didn't surprise me too much, the 49ers have Deebo Samuel under contract for 2022. If you want your bottom basement argument, they have him under contract. They need playmakers for Trey Lance. And this isn't a situation where, you know, the Niners have an expensive quarterback and it's going to offset something that's going to happen with, I don't know, a Devontae Adams or a Tyreek Hill or something like that. They have the means to do a long-term extension, and they've made that very clear. They want to do a long-term extension. So not totally shocking. if I'm being honest. But as far as the reasons behind all of this, that's still a mystery to us. We still have no idea how things got so sour. I mean, was it the usage? That seems kind of pedestrian, right? I mean, he doesn't want to be a running back. All right, but what happens in key situations where it's like, hey, look, this toss cracker, jet sweep, you could score a touchdown on this. And usually your best playmakers, what do they want? They want the ball, yeah. You know? So I don't know. It's a relationship that needs to be repaired. It can. The little side note, I don't know if you've seen this, but there was a post, I think just a share post on Instagram where someone was sharing John Lynch's comments about right. it to KMBR, yeah. saying like, you know, we want him to be on the roster, you know, this year or something along those lines. I'm not quoting exactly, but Debo liked it yeah. on Instagram. So it was just like, okay, you guys getting along a little better now?
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe it's the text back and forth. Hey, I miss you. I miss yeah. you too.
Debo needs some on? Debo needs some social media training over next offseason. That's all I gotta say.
Agent needs to,
like,
oh gosh,
like, take his phone from him, please. Like,
agents do that.
Yeah,
agents do that. I mean, and I'm not just saying this out of conjecture. No, this is a fact. Like,
yeah,
I talked to insiders here at FanSided, and they talk about that. Like, a player will go out there and tweet or, you know, post something on Instagram that's absolutely stupid. You know, and a lot of times it's a knee jerk reaction. It's something that maybe you and I would do, but we don't have agents. You know,
right.
my homeowners insurance.
We're not standing to make yeah. millions of dollars on our jobs. So
yeah, my homeowners insurance agent could be like, Peter, take that tweet down. But the agents will call up and they'd be like, you get rid of that right now. And sometimes it could be a tactic, but a lot of times it's like, hey,
yeah.
buddy, you know, delete that stat. So
yeah. So lots of intrigue. I'm with you. I think it would have taken a lot to get him out. And I'm really hoping I did see that him liking the post thing. And hopefully that means he's feeling a little better about it. And maybe he just needed to let them know he needed to air some sort of grievance, whatever it was. And now that he's done that, he feels better. I don't know. As you say, he is under contract for this year, and they can franchise tag him twice, right, before they even test. And really, I mean, I doubt they're going to do that, because they tend not to, the franchise across the board, even before Lynch and Shanahan were there, have tended not to use that franchise tag. But theoretically, they can keep him under control for three more years without having to give him a contract extension. I don't think they're going to do that, but that is something that he needs to keep in mind. And the way that the CBA is written, there's just not a lot of room for him to do anything unless he decides, you know what, I'm done. Like, those are his options right now. Like, he has to play, or he has to stand to lose what money he does have coming in. So, anyway, let's transition again. No first round pick, but the Niners did end up making 9 picks in all on days 2 and 3. The bulk of them came, as you noted, in the sort of middle rounds, although they did have a couple of picks in at the end of day 2 in round number 3. So they started off their draft because of where they ended their season in the NFC Championship game. They had their own pick in round 2, which was what, the third to last or something like that in the second round, pick number 61 overall. And they went with USC. That would be University of Southern California, not the one closer to me. defensive lineman.
I was going to say University of Santa Clara.
No, not that one either. University of Southern California, edge rusher Drake Jackson was the second round pick. Peter, were you a little surprised to see them go this direction this early in the draft? Because I think I was.
No. No.
A little bit.
No. I can say what I would have done, and it probably would have been addressing the secondary. It probably would have been addressing the offensive line. But that's what Peter would have done.
Sure.
The MO of this front office is the trenches. We know that. And if there's ever going to be the slightest of needs on either side of the line of scrimmage, the Niners are going to stress that first. And you looked at this and you said, okay, 49ers have Nick Bosa. That's great. Opposite him, there's really a bunch of you C-list guys, right? Like your rotational backups. You can talk about Kerry Hyder all you want. Oh, he had 8.5 sacks back in 2020. Well, Bosa was out for almost the entire year. Mm-hmm. Dee Ford was out for almost the entire year. Dee Ford's not coming back. So you're not going to have that 1-2 punch. The rest of the guys, you know, Jordan Willis, okay, fine. But, you know, Kamoko Ture, like, decent last year, but still rotational guys. Samson Ebbing, like, again, rotational backup caliber players. They're important. They have roles. But Drake Jackson, albeit raw, inconsistent at USC, but in USC itself was inconsistent. You know, 4-3, 3-4. You know, what are we doing on defense? I don't know. Hey, you know, Drake, drop down to 250 pounds. Now we want you to get it back up to 280. And it, like, they did so much stuff with him. But if he projects well enough in year two, you're probably looking at an every down defensive end. Now, you're not looking at a Nick Bosa type player, but Jackson might be, you know, 7-8 sacks, maybe a couple of double-digit campaigns. And that's what you really want to have. And the 49ers defensive line has thrived when you've had those two bookends. It's been rare. You were supposed to see that with Dee Ford and Bosa. Didn't see too much of it, unfortunately. Saw a little bit of it in 2019. But you need to have one of those guys on a rookie contract and someone who's prolific enough. He's a great fit. And if he winds up, you know, hitting his ceiling, you know, his floor is probably going to be pretty good. But if he winds up hitting his ceiling, yeah, you're looking at a double-digit sack guy every year. And having one of those guys on a rookie contract, that'll make Nick Bosa's extension a lot easier to absorb, let me tell you. Right. So it didn't surprise me at all. Didn't surprise me one bit.
Yeah. I just for clarification, I definitely expected them to go edge rusher at some point during this draft. I guess it's sort of a matter of, you know, they might have had a couple of players on their board and this is just kind of the way it fell. So I'm totally with you. They need another person, another guy who can step up and be maybe not dominant on the other side of the ball, but if Bosa is getting double teamed and getting all the attention on his side, they just need somebody who's good enough to take advantage of the opportunities and who's going to win his one-on-one matchups that he's going to see consistently. And if Jackson can do that, his numbers are probably going to look really super gaudy in a lot of ways, because he's going to have those opportunities to do a lot of cleanup work if Bosa is still creating pressure opposite him. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do. As you say, initially he may be because he's going to have to bulk back up again. I think they got him, or USC had him at a lower weight again last year. So hopefully he'll be able to kind of, as the season progresses, kind of get to that place that he wants to be. I think I saw him something like 255, 260 is where he wants to be when it's all said and done. But yeah, I'm looking forward to hopefully them finally being able to realize the sort of bookend pass rusher, maybe hopefully two dominant pass rushers opposite one another that they've been looking for a while, really since 2019, as you mentioned. So I think it'll be exciting. The next two picks that the Niners made actually both came in the third round, and they were both offensive guys. So we'll kind of talk about them sort of together, sort of apart, because you certainly can't have the conversation about these two players without getting into a little bit of specifics on each of them. So with third round, 93rd overall, they took LSU running back, is it Tyrion, I think is how that first name is pronounced. Everybody kept calling him Ty, so I'm assuming we'll go with that. Davis Price, so running back out of LSU. And then with the 105th overall pick, I think close out the third round, they took, SMU wide receiver, Danny Gray. So, kind of bringing it back to the Deebo Samuel conversation, it's not terribly surprising to see them bring in, guys, in the case of Davis Price, who can be a more, sort of pounding between the tackles type running back. It's not surprising to see them bring in somebody like Danny Gray, who is a sort of vertical field stretcher, but could also be somebody who could take a little of the pressure off of Deebo Samuel in terms of a gadgety type player, especially early on in his career. But overall, what reactions did you have to these two picks, and maybe each into them individually as well?
Well, yeah, that first pick was a shocker. And, you know, when I literally saw Davis Price go, I was just like, I mean, the couldn't have been louder. Bad value based on draft projection, and granted, I'm going based off what I've read. I didn't really study Tyrion Davis Price a ton, you know. So I was like, I thought that guy would be in like round five, you know. And then as far as need, horrible, like horrible. And I'm not saying the 49ers didn't need to address the running back room at all. But you got down into like round six where the 49ers had three picks, and there were still really good running backs available in round six. Address it then. I think what made me even more upset, the 49ers had a bona fide need at safety. Still do. You know, Jaquaski Tartt's not there. And there were two safeties, literally two safeties I absolutely loved. And Kirby Joseph out of Illinois, and Nick Cross out of Maryland. We talked about Nick Cross last pod, and they were sitting right there, both of them. Nick Cross, I didn't expect to be there in round three. I was like, that could be a good round two pick, but he was there, and so was Kirby Joseph. Those guys could be plug and play type players. And I don't know if the Niners are trying to get a little cute, or I don't know if they had zero interest in either one of those guys. But shortly after San Francisco passed on them, the Lions and the Colts swooped him up. And so Joseph going to Detroit, and then Cross going to Indy. So I was pissed. I'm not gonna lie. I was trying to write the reaction pieces to it, be like, all right, level-headed, you know. Like, maybe this works out. The 49ers are a run first team, and yeah, like Elijah Mitchell got hurt a lot last year. No, it's stunk. Now, again, maybe he balls out and shows that the 49ers know what they're talking about, or maybe that was a very big influence from Anthony Lynn. Maybe that was like, hey, trust me, there's going to be somebody else in on this guy. Don't believe the round five, round six stuff. I don't know. Yeah. I do like the Danny Gray pick. You know, questionable hands, but you know, he's fast, you know, and you know, he'll still struggle with press man coverage, but the guy ran a 4.33. And one of the things to make note of too, you look at the 49ers top four wide receivers, and you know, I get a piece on this on Niner Noise that kind of broke it down. The top four guys all offer something a little different. So, you know, Debo's Debo is your playmaker, dual threat, wide back. Plays with physicality and speed. He's your alpha. That's fine. You need an alpha. Brandon Ayuk, best Niners wide receiver when it comes to beating man coverage. And you saw when the Niners played a lot of man teams, Ayuk played well. Juwan Jennings, third down receiver, looked up this stat. I think 10 of his 24 catches last year were on third downs, and eight of them went for a first down. So, you know, he's your possession guy, and you need those guys. Even he's not fast, but big body target. Tough, whatever. Danny Gray's your go route guy. You know, he can run those deep posts. He can pull at least one defensive back down the field. And with Trey Lance, you need to respect that. And so if Gray matures, like you mentioned earlier, a gadget type player, right? And it's kind of just what he needs to be right now. You're not going to get a ton of targets, but your yards per reception might be pretty good. Like, you know, like the original Richie James from way back when, you know, like you never get any targets, but you're averaging like 22 yards a reception. So that's probably going to be the stat line if he develops okay. But yeah, no, I like that pick. And I was reading some reviews on him. Some draft analysts were like, I'm not a big fan of the pick. Others like, oh, I am. He's one of those guys where it just depends on where you go. Like, what type of system are you in? And in this particular system, and for that void where as the fourth wide receiver on the depth chart, if he makes it, that's a perfect fit. you're the go guy. You know, you pull the top off of a defense. So you're better known pass catchers like Debo and Ayuk and even Jennings to a smaller degree, George Kittle. They're going to have a little easier of a time getting open now with one less defender. So I like that pick a lot.
Yeah, I agree. With the whole, you know, Davis Price thing, again, I think the analysis of the win is really the problem with it. I don't have anything necessarily to say about the player one way or the other. It's just at that particular point in the draft, I get it. Like, as you mentioned, Elijah Mitchell was banged up a little bit last year. Trace Sermon, who knows what's going on with him. You know, Jeff Wilson didn't play a whole lot last year because he was coming off that knee injury. So there's a fair amount of question marks in terms of how consistent and prolific the 49ers running backs can be. And so I get sort of like adding to the group, but as you say, the timing of it was certainly not great. And then the Danny Gray situation is it's nice because he is stepping into a situation where they're not going to ask him to do a lot necessarily. And so something that he can just kind of, as I said, just sort of step into a, like, okay, run down the field as fast as you can. the play will get you open, and we'll sort of figure it out as we move along. So, all right. So the fourth round came, and the Niners had one fourth round pick, pick 134 overall, and they went with their first offensive lineman of the day. A lot of people I know were kind of like finally with this. And it was an interesting pick. Offensive lineman Spencer Burford out of the University of Texas at San Antonio, listed as an offensive lineman. He, as far as I understand it, has some experience at all four, both tackles, both guard positions at various times throughout his time at UTSA. He did play left tackle at the Senior Bowl, so he does have some experience there. But I don't know a whole lot about this guy, and obviously UTSA is a kind of a smaller school, Conference USA. But I like the versatility aspect of somebody like this, who may end up being more of an interior type guy, just given the sort of physical look of him. But I like the opportunity to grab somebody who you can maybe slot into three or four different places and feel pretty comfortable with him. And I think that's the type of thing you're looking for at this point in the draft.
Yeah. And we were talking about the top pick being an offensive lineman. The Niners definitely shotgunned that question mark in the draft. And one of the things that I noticed is none of the guys were really a true center until you get into undrafted free agency. So that made me kind of wonder about Alex Mack. Hey, you coming back? Maybe, I hope so. But either way, both Burford and the Niners' first of three six-round picks, Nick Zakli, if you look like it, I think it's like Nick Zakhelge.
Yeah, something Zakli like that.
Or something. Yeah, out of Fordham, another small school guy. Admittedly, didn't do a ton of research on either one of those two players, kind of more just like reading some scouting reports. Certainly, I did not go out and watch film on either player until after the draft. Really did not, trust me, I didn't get that far down in the weeds. But anyway, everything I read about both those guys were like, okay, apparently Zakli, I forget who on the Niners staff, and I read this on Twitter from an insider, I apologize, I can't remember who and or who on the 49ers staff, but they were literally wanting to get him a year ago and say, hey, when he comes out next year, put him somewhere, like he needs to be on a big board. So anyway, like the movement, like the flexibility for guard, for tackle, Burford kind of more of a guard type who can play tackle. Zakia more of a tackle type who can play guard. Last year you saw the problems with the depth of the offensive line. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw it in training camp, the preseason. It was not good. It was not good. I mean, when you had Tom Compton, and credit to his run blocking last year, but when he's your best option as a swing tackle. That should tell you something. And now he's gone. So how much more is the problem is that exacerbated. So like those two picks, and again, we're talking about rookies. No idea if these guys are even going to come close to panning out, but from everything that I read and saw, from what little I watched on them after the draft, it's like, okay, all right. I can fully get behind that. Yeah. It's not flashy. It's not sexy, but sign me up. I'm on board. That depth was a problem and hopefully it's better now.
Yeah. I mean, with Burford and Zach Kilge or however, sorry, Nick, we apologize for butchering your name. I'm sure you get a lot of it.
Look at my last name and I understand.
And if you look at the list of undrafted free agents we'll get to later on, the bites of the apple situation is really coming into play here. Like, it seems like they understood that they're rebuilding their offensive line in a lot of ways. I mean, the only thing you know for sure is, Trent Williams can play left tackle for you, and probably Mike McGlinchey is going to play right tackle, and probably Aaron Banks is going to be your left guard. And after that, it's just like, okay, well, if Alex Mack is back, he'll play center. And then the right guard is really the only hole you have to fill. And maybe it's Daniel Brunskill or maybe it's somebody else. But the bites of the apple situation, like I said, I think is the big thing that they want to give themselves as many chances between the guys that they drafted, between these undrafted guys, between even players like Colton McKivitz that they've had in the building for a couple of years now, or Jalen Moore, who probably has a pretty good chance of being the swing tackle going into training camp, even somebody like Justin School, who's been around forever and has kind of been the forgotten man for various reasons. but, he's in play here as well. So I think that's something to keep in mind as we go forward with the offensive line. And like you said, the versatility is good, and the ability to give as many of these guys a chance is really something that I'm looking forward to as well. All right, so in between those two offensive lineman picks that we talked about with Burford and Zakel G, or sorry, again, we're bad at this.
Nick.
we're trying. Nick, good old Nick. Maybe he can start at right guard, and it could be Nick and Nick. There we go. We had another... The first secondary selection for the Niners in this draft. And I'll be honest with you, when this pick was made, I totally blanked on the fact that the Niners technically don't have a starting slot cornerback for the upcoming season. And so that sort of made this pick make even more sense in my brain. But they went with University of Toledo cornerback Samuel Womack, who... if you look at the measurables, 5'9", 189, ran a 4.39 40-yard dash, reminds me of somebody that we used to know. Peter, does he remind you of anybody that you used to know on the 49ers?
Oh, on the 49ers? Oh,
yeah.
Like in real life?
Yeah, just some random person. Does he remind you of some guy? No.
My brother.
Former 49er player. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I could call my brother. Hey, you're about this height. He doesn't run a 4.43. That's the Kwon Williams replacement. And yeah. One of the things, too, that I think needs to get said over this, and we talked about this after last year's draft, we were looking at Diamador Lenore. I think, okay, maybe this guy will be the nickel replacement. Lenore's not twitchy, played almost exclusively boundary his collegiate career at Oregon. So Womack, in contrast, played a lot over the slot, has that, the attributes are very quite literal to Williams, and it's not just in terms of speed or three-cone drill or height and weight. But like Kwon Williams, he was a guy who didn't let size get in the way. I mean, you're not going to put him on someone 6'4", but he played bigger than his size, Womack and Williams, and has a little bit of blitzing capabilities, So, yeah, I mean, again, we're talking about a rookie from a small school program who's never set foot on an NFL field before, but again, if this works out, you've got yourself a decent nickel corner. And the good thing for San Francisco, you mentioned not kind of being remiss for, oh yeah, there's nobody there. now there's like a million, what, like 80, 90 cornerbacks. They have so many cornerbacks right now. Yeah.
Yes.
Like just happened overnight. You're like, oh, there's a lot of guys there now. Jason Verrett's back and Dante Johnson will be on the roster in 2043. So,
yep.
Anyway, Emmanuel Mosley can play over the slot. Jimmy Ward can play the slot. I don't like, don't know if you're going to do that because you don't really have another starting safety.
Yeah.
You're relying on special teams. So that's a story for another problem. But anyway, so Womack doesn't have to be pressed into the fray, but he'll certainly be given the right to earn that job right out of training camp. So yeah, no, I like the pick. I thought it was fine.
Yeah, absolutely. While you were talking, I was trying to find his three cone number, which I believe was like quite impressive effort for somebody. So he's got the athletic kind of build to really step in immediately. Obviously he'll have to be put in a good situation. And hopefully that will be one thing that D'Amico Ryans will be able to do with him quickly and see. You know, as you say, it wouldn't, if he doesn't immediately step into the starting role as a fifth round pick, it doesn't mean that he's a failure. Because they do have other players, you know, worst case scenario, if Emmanuel Mosley has to step in as a slot guy, and then you have Chartravius Ward and I don't know, Jason Verrett or Ambry Thomas or D'Amador Lenore, whoever ends up winning that other outside corner position, or Dante Johnson. Let's hope not. Something horrible has happened if that's the case. No offense to Dante Johnson, but if all of those guys are not able to be starting, then that's not good. But yeah, I think Womack is definitely the type of player who will have an opportunity to step into that position, if not immediately, very quickly. So sixth round was next. Mentioned our boy Nick. We would be remiss if we didn't mention he is actually, I believe, the first player ever to be drafted out of Fordham University, if I'm not mistaken. I think I saw that, or the first one in a long time. I don't remember what it's pretty select.
I don't know that. Yeah.
Let's just say not a lot of Fordham players have played in the NFL. So that's good. They had two more sixth round picks. Those were literally back to back. Now, I don't know about you. We talked about how there were no trades. These seemed like one of these two picks was going to get traded because it seemed bizarre that they were just going to be like, yeah, we got two picks back to back. We're just going to make them in whatever order we want. Who cares? If any of the picks in this entire draft had been shifted, one of these two would have been the one that made sense. But they ended up taking them both, and they went with, pretty 49ers like, at least this regime of players. Although they did harken back to some old habits of former GMs whose names we will not mention on this podcast, with pick number 220 in the draft, the first of the two sixth round picks back to back, with the selection of University of Central Florida defensive lineman Kalia Davis, who is a big fella, possibly a DJ Jones replacement on down the line. And of course, Peter, the reason that I say on down the line is because he's coming off an ACL surgery and probably is unlikely to see the field in 2022. So that brings you back, doesn't it?
It sure does. And don't know if he'll be ready for training camp. And I keep thinking of guys like DeAndre Smelter and
Hank Carradine.
I guess with Davis, you know, if you're going to just throw darts at redshirting guys, you might as well do so like late in round six for just
right.
Like, I don't know. Like,
and,
I
mean, and the along the defensive line.
There's enough bodies there. You know, Maurice Hurst, Kevin Givens, they're proven defensive tackles on the interior, can play an A-gap. you don't need to worry about Davis ever working out. But at the same time, I'm like, like, was there something about him that stood out about maybe somebody else that might have worked? But hey, look, you know, former linebacker who put on a lot of weight to be that, you know, kind of that squatty nose type, has a little bit of a pass rush move. And you had pretty good tackles for a loss. And again, you're not going to replace DJ Jones right out of the gate. The 49ers have some veterans who could plug the gap, but hey, it's a flyer. That's all it is. It's all it means to me. So yeah, it's
absolutely.
It is what it is.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely with you. It was a little, it's kind of one of those like, they got to be up to like 18 or 19 defensive linemen at this point.
Yeah. 32.
Yeah.
I think they're going to sign four more.
Probably. And so Davis is in absolutely no rush. If he starts, he's likely to start the season on the PUP list, which means that he doesn't take up a roster spot in that particular case, right? If he starts training camp there. Also means you don't have to worry about him like going through waivers and all that kind of stuff. So it's in that regard, I guess I get it, because you draft him and then you put him on the PUP list and then you just know he's going to be around on your team for the foreseeable future. And you don't have to worry about, you know, putting him up against waivers to release him or whatever rather than other things. So again, no rush there. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. Certainly an athlete there in a relatively large body. And so we'll see what happens with that. Pick 221, which followed immediately after that, which I don't understand why they don't send both picks out at the same time. It's kind of ridiculous, but anyway.
Well, if the 49ers had, if because they came very close to missing out on pick number 220, so you know they're very late on the clock. So if they had missed that, the next team in line could have jumped them,
which would have been them.
The next team, which would have been themselves,
right?
If I was them, I would have waited until like the, you know, I forget how, you know, it's like what, how many minutes, and I would have waited until like a minute was left. Here's one pick. Here's two.
There you go. So we're done with two pick 221, sixth round. They went with another defensive back, another cornerback in the form of Penn State corner, former Penn State corner, I should say, Tariq Castro Fields. So we got two hyphenated names in the new group so far. Yeah, I don't know. As we talked about the numbers here. Between the defensive line and the cornerback room, the just sheer number of humans in the group is just so high. And in this case, with the cornerback specifically, the sheer number of like pretty young guys that they have on the team is really high as well. I mean, if you think about it, just the cornerbacks themselves, Charchavius Moore or Ward and Emmanuel Mosley are your veterans in this particular case, not counting Jason Verrett, obviously, in terms of players sort of slotted into starting positions. And they're only what, year five, something like that. So it's a pretty young group for the most part. And they drafted a couple last year. They drafted two more this year. It's a lot of numbers in there. So it'll be interesting to see how Castro Fields sort of slides in there and what his role could be. You could certainly see a situation where it's like an Ambry Thomas type situation where he doesn't do much for the first couple of weeks and then maybe finds his role as the season goes on. But any thoughts about Castro Fields?
Yeah, good pick, raw. You know, I mean, good closing speed, or recovery speed, I should say. Good body for a quarterback, just raw, and that's about it. And, there can be players who just take time to develop. Young defensive backs especially tend to follow that trend. You know, the coverages are more complex. The opposing receivers are much stronger, faster. They have more savvy routes. So it can take them a little while. Even if you're really good, it can take you a while. This is a situation where the 49ers have probably admitted that they didn't put enough resources into stockpiling the cornerback room over the last few years. And that led to the Josh Normans and the Dre Kirkpatricks of the world. So, Castro Fields is going to have an uphill battle to even make the 53-man roster. But, like the road Emmanuel Mosley took, undrafted free agent, didn't see a lot of playing time his rookie year at all. I think got hurt as well too, but like started the Super Bowl. He was a starter in the Super Bowl. So the Niners eventually came to like him. So and who knows if Castro Fields will go that route, but throw more darts at the problem. You know, by the time you're getting to this point in the draft anyway, you're not just throwing darts, you're throwing darts blindfolded. So you have just whatever, like you just hope
right.
that you get something that's great. And who knows? Dante Johnson's getting up there in age, right?
He can't play forever in spite of age. What we think.
Yeah, he's just finally hit the first third of his career. So like I said, 2034 when he signs his last 1-year deal with the 49ers. Three times that season.
Yeah,
I'd have to turn it over to Castro Fields, but who knows? You know that, and maybe that's the role. I'd honestly think that might be the ceiling for Castro Fields. Hey, you're that number four. You're our guy. If someone gets hurt, like, and we got to bump people up the depth chart, you know, you're going to be that kind of number four guy there. So, but yeah, you know, raw, but some of the attributes are nice to look at. So you can think that he might turn into something useful in 2 or 3 years time.
Yeah. I mean, and I think we've had this conversation before, but a guy at his position, both position as on the field and his draft position, it's all about, can he show himself to be good enough in the defensive backfield, but also a standout in the special teams situation? That's going to be really what it's going to come down to for somebody like Castro Fields to make the 53-man roster. But as you say, lots of names, and it's going to be tough for, there's going to be some names that we talk about today. There's going to be some other names that you're like, oh, well, that's interesting, that are going to get the cut before the season starts. All right. So on to the final pick, not just for the 49ers, but also for the entire draft. Mr. Irrelevant, as they call it. I don't know why that seems mean. I've always thought that's kind of like a mean name to refer to the final pick of the NFL draft, but apparently they're nice to them. They got, you know, like a fancy jersey that says, you know, pick number 262, and it says Mr. Irrelevant on the back, and there's like, you know, things they do for him and that sort of thing. So that's kind of cool. Niners went with a pretty surprising direction here. They went with a quarterback of, for all the conversations that we've had all off season long so far about the quarterback situation, the Niners decided to, you know, add another body here. They went Iowa State quarterback Brock Purdy, who's a 4-year player, started almost the entirety of the 4 years that he was at Iowa State, ended up being you know, breaking a bunch of school records and in terms of completion percentage and that sort of thing during his senior year. You know, decent player. It seems to have brought the Iowa State program into some semblance of respectability. Not gonna wow you with his athleticism or his arm strength or anything like that, but clearly somebody who get the ball where it needs to go. And I thought this was interesting, but at this point in the draft, you're really wanting to make it a decision between, hey, we're probably gonna get this kid anyway, or we're gonna try to get this kid anyway in the undrafted group, so we might as well just go ahead and draft him anyway, because what's the likelihood that whoever this guy is, even if they drafted anything else, a safety or a wide receiver or anything like that, what's the likelihood this guy makes the roster and impacts it anyway? So I thought that was interesting. I didn't know what you thought about this pick, Peter.
Yeah. Well, it's the first call on the undrafted free agents. That's what it is. It's all it is, really.
Right.
Because I mean, there's a possibility where if the 49ers wanted to go after him as an undrafted free agent, that some other team that maybe has a less certain of a quarterback room, and it's not like the 49ers have one that's certain, but certainly one that's more dire, would have looked at him and said, hey, we'll offer you more money as an undrafted free agent. and that could have played a role in whatever. But, you know, here's how this could play out. And I don't see, it's possible, because you never know. It's possible the 49ers say, look, we're going to move on from Nate Sudfeld. Now, why would you do that? Nate Sudfeld's got a $2 million guaranteed contract this year. Why would you do that? You know, that would be silly, but let's play the fun bowl game here a little bit and assume the 49ers aren't going to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo for nothing. As much as I don't believe that play out it that way. And as much as it just weirds me out, whatever, he's still on the roster. Another day goes by. What if Jimmy G stays? What if Trey Lance stays? What if Purdy beats out Sudfeld in training camp? I don't know if that would be the case. Again, money matters, but what if that's the case? The other factor in this, and this is the more likely situation, is let's say Garoppolo is moved, or however, you know, the 49ers is like, hey, we're just gonna release you. You're free to sign wherever for the best deal you can get. Go take it. Hey, thanks for what you did. Bye. Or he's traded, whatever. Who cares? Garoppolo's gone by week one. You might need a quarterback room of Trey Lance, Nate Sudfeld, and then a Brock Purdy on the practice squad. And again, you got to assume that he slips through waivers down there. But let me tell you, right now, status check, heat check, nobody's going to go out there and try to claim Brock Purdy and he'll say, hey, yeah, we're going to sign you to,
unless he blows it up in the preseason or something like that.
Right. Right. No one's going to do that. And even then it'd be like preseason week three in like the fourth quarter. So no one's going to do that. So, you know, maybe that's the look. 49ers have carried three quarterbacks for a while now. That goes back to 2018. And so why would anything change with just one of those being on the practice squad? So hey, if you subscribe to the idea that you should draft a quarterback every year, no matter what, this was an argument that Akshaz Gwavegila over at Niner Noise, a really good writer of ours, you should go check out his work. He wrote about how Mr. Irrelevant is actually relevant for the 49ers this year. So go check it out on the website. Very good point. Just saying the premium at that position, you know, even if a quarterback is not looking very good entering the draft, which pretty much everybody in this draft, maybe it's aside from Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett for some reason. But like, just because the premium of the position and what have you, if you get a chance to develop somebody and turn them into something remotely useful, like remember when Nick Mullins had trade value, like at the end of 2018, remember that?
I do. That was a good time.
Yeah. Like, that was insane. The 49ers could have taken that. They did not. And oops, right?
Yeah, big.
Nick Mullins was worth something. Oops. Yeah. So anyway, just the premium at the position, there's always a need. Take a quarterback, draft one, you know, whatever, however it goes, and just see what happens. And so maybe that's the goal here. Again, it's the last pick in the draft. So one, who cares?
Right.
Two, again, you're talking about another guy who's got the longest of long shots to make the roster. But three, he's a quarterback, right?
Right. Yeah.
That's different than Tariq Castro Fields or Kalia Davis. Like, we're not going to be talking as much about those guys in a month's time. We'll be talking about Brock Purdy in a month's time. Yeah. Guarantee it.
Yeah. All true there. All good points. The other and. I do need to point out the fact that if you're including players on their practice squad, technically there were two seasons in a row where they carried four quarterbacks. Because remember, there was the whole thing where they wouldn't let Beathard go. And it's like, stop. Like, why are we carrying three quarterbacks on the 53 man roster for 2 years in a row? Anyway, little pent up aggression there. The other thing that that is true. And I heard this, Matt Mayokan mentioned this, Jimmy Garoppolo will not be a part of any of the sort of off season program things that are going to coming up over the next couple of months, because he has not been cleared to throw a football as of yet. The likelihood that he will be cleared to throw a football at any point between now and training camp, and even after training camp, I don't know, is pretty slim. So you just kind of need a third guy to step in there. You can't run all of your offseason program quarterbacking with just Trey Lance and Nate Sudfeld. That's just not going to work. So Purdy could just kind of be a camp arm who also you get a chance to take a look at him in greater detail, because you will have him in your building and on your team for throughout the summer. And so, yeah, as you say, if Garoppolo ends up sticking around, maybe you drop Sudfeld because you need to save all the money you can save in that regard or something. I don't know. Or, you know, maybe there's a situation where he clears waivers and you get him on your practice squad, and then he's somebody that you can develop and he turns into your backup quarterback in a couple of years. I really don't know what the situation might be, but as you said, better to have somebody that you can develop on your own as opposed to bringing in somebody else. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't think he's it's not a complete waste of a pick. I'll say that.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that third person, as you mentioned, hey, just get somebody who's going to be running the third team, you know, during OTAs and everything like that. That's fine. That's fine. So, but you never know. Again, it's the premium on the position. So we'll see what happens with them. Like I said, we'll be talking more about Brock Purdy than we will some of these other draft choices, but maybe not as much as we should about some of those undrafted free agents. I don't know about you, and this is probably it's weird. Maybe it speaks to just relative unimpressive draft, and that's all around, not just the 49ers, but just kind of like a, okay, you know, very blue collar type draft, pedestrian for a good perspective. But I was almost more impressed and excited about the undrafted free agents than I was about the actual draft. And normally that's not a good thing, because you're like, what'd you do in the draft? But in this case, you're looking at multiple players who are scouted as mid round picks,
mm-hmm.
who the Niners picked up on the cheap. And literally it was within like minutes after Brock Purdy was announced. It's just like click, 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 bam, 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 bam. Like guys who were very good, very, very, very good that we'd scouted, that we had written about. Yeah. I don't know. Who are you for your favorites on that?
Yeah. Yeah. So just point of reference, the Niners ended up with 14 undrafted free agents scattered throughout various positions. Just kind of a quick list them off. It took Kevin Atkins, a defensive lineman out of Fresno State. Jeremiah Gemmel, a linebacker from North Carolina. Taylor Hawkins, a safety out of San Diego State. Quantrez Knight, a cornerback. There's another name. There you go for the cornerback room out of UCLA. Taysier Mack, a wide receiver out of Pittsburgh. Tay Martin, a wide receiver out of Oklahoma State. Jordan Mason, a running back out of Georgia Tech. Marcelino McCrary Ball, we have our third member of our all hyphenated team for the 49ers, a linebacker out of Indiana. Segun Alubi, a linebacker out of San Diego State. So a couple of like little pockets of teams that they're picking from. Leon O'Neal Jr., a safety out of Texas A&M. Jason Poe, offensive lineman out of Mercer. Sam Schulterer, an offensive lineman out of Minnesota. Garrett Walston, a tight end out of North Carolina, and Donovan West, an offensive lineman out of Arizona State. So lots of names there. As I said, when we were talking about the offensive line that they drafted, there's four more right there, three more for the offensive line, just from the undrafted group, another running back, several linebackers, a couple of safeties, more defensive backs, that sort of thing. But the names that I'm most interested in there are three that jump out to me immediately. The first two are two of those guys specifically on the offensive line that you noted were guys that a lot of teams were thinking were, you know, mid to late round players. And that's Jason Poe out of Mercer and Donovan West, who's primarily a center out of Arizona State. I was sort of pounding the table in the proverbially speaking in our Slack channel during the draft for Donovan West, the center out of Arizona State, mostly because even though we don't know what's happening with Alex Mack for this year, and I've said this already, if he is indeed going to come back, I feel like they need to have his replacement in the building at the beginning of this year. And maybe that's one of the guys that they drafted. Maybe Spencer Burford turns into a center. I don't know. But Donovan West is categorically, outside of Alex Mack, the person on the roster with the most games playing at center under his belt, albeit they're all college games. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen with him. He also has some experience at both left and right guard. So if he shows anything and shows the ability to be a starting player, maybe he's somebody who can step in immediately. And again, with that versatility thing, he fills three backup roles with one person. Similar kind of situation with Jason Poe. Peter, I don't know if you saw the video of Jason Poe. I think if I read this correctly, Jason Poe came into college as a running back. Did you read this same thing?
Yeah, dude can move. Dude can move. Even though he put on a lot of weight, the guy can
move. He's 6'1", 300 pounds, but he moves well. So he's going to be an interesting player, obviously, at that height and weight. It's probably another guard option. So they're not lacking in interior offensive line options. And so that's going to be like one of the main camp battles to watch out for this year is who's, you know, assuming that Aaron Banks, and you got to hope and assume at the same time, I think with this particular situation, that he's going to lock down that left guard position. What's going to happen on the other side? Who are going to be the backups? What's going to happen with Alex Mack is another question altogether, but that interior question is going to be big. So those are two names that jump out to me. The other is Leon O'Neal Jr., who is another one of those players that was going to be a fourth rounder, going to be a sixth rounder. And then he was an undrafted free agent. And so we mentioned the safety need, and maybe I'm not saying that an undrafted free agent is going to immediately step into the starting safety opposite Jimmy Ward, but he would be a name to watch out for as somebody who's certainly coming into this offseason with a chip on his shoulder and might be somebody to pay attention to coming into training camp.
He quite literally with a chip on his shoulder. I was looking at his social media and he's super grateful to the 49ers, but he's like, hey, I ain't going to forget this. And I think even in his, you know, some of his introductory comments when he was talking about that, but yeah, look, this shows you the fluidity of the draft. And this is one of those things I'm going to air a grievance. I'm going to share a pet peeve that I have every draft season. And it's draft festivus. It's the airing of grievances. How about that?
I like it.
Yeah. It's so one of my pet peeves, anytime someone does a mock, you do a mock, I do a mock. Even if we use one of those like draft tools, right? Like the simulations where it's like, okay, we'll make 49ers picks, but the computer randomly does the rest, right? You find someone and it's like, oh, cool, this player is still available in round four, right? I'll pick him, you know? And then you put out the mock and then, you know, the peanut gallery person in the comment section or on Twitter is like, no way that guy makes it past round two. You're an idiot, blah, 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 you know, all that. This is proof enough. You have no clue what's going to happen during the draft. None, right? Like none. They're literally like, there were so many players who slipped and fell. And I don't mean that, you know, literally.
Hopefully not,
I mean,
literally.
They slipped and fell when they were taking ice skating lessons like I would. But anyway, so many slipped down deeper into the draft. And, you know, you don't even need to pick out the 49ers. You can look at so many other players around the league. We mentioned two earlier. It was like Kirby Joseph and Nick Cross falling into round three. I was like, okay. Donovan West, Mel Kiper and Todd McShay had him on their last mock before the draft began. He was a round three guy, a third round guy. I think they mocked him to the Eagles, if I remember right. Donovan West in the third round. Niners got him as an undrafted free agent. Jason Poe, a guy that fifth, sixth round draft grade on him. Undrafted free agent. Great fit for that scheme, by the way. And then I did a little bit of scouting on Leon O'Neal Jr., Texas A&M. In the box safety, you don't really want him covering deep down the field one-on-one, but thumper against the run, you know, kind of a strong side linebacker type. You know, if you're playing him in the box, you need that physical presence there. Good fit. A lot of round five draft grades on him, you know, and again, those are the sort of things that you find. And, you know, full disclaimer, we're talking about rookie prospects, like 2/3 of these guys, you know, even in a best case scenario for the 49ers are going to flame out by year two, right? Like they're not going to, you're going to get into their second year and you're like, yeah, this guy's not cutting it. But still, at least based on what we know now, just those three finds alone are excellent grabs in terms of value, with probably a lot more potential than what other players got. As you mentioned with West, as he kept falling down through the draft order, like I'm getting to like number 220 overall. Hey, 49ers have two picks. Maybe this is when they'll take him. And they didn't. And at 221, they didn't. And then it's like, all right, Mr. Irrelevant, they've got to take him now. He's the best player available, period. Oh, it's Brock Purdy? Okay. And then literally after that, I think it was like a minute later, I think it was Aaron Wilson of Pro Football Network who broke the news that West was signing. $100,000 guaranteed, by the way. So mm-hmm. pretty good chance of making the 53-man roster in that regard. That's a lot of money for an undrafted free agent.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And again, he fills a lot of potential needs, because if he is good enough for them to view him like that, in terms of the amount of money that they've given him, and that versatility is going to be really important here as well. The only other name that I thought was kind of a standout was Tay Martin, the wide receiver out of Oklahoma State, a big guy, which is 6'3". 188, so he's not like big, but he's kind of a taller fella, which is something that the Niners don't have much of in terms of their wide receiver core. So he could be an interesting player to kind of watch out for as well in that regard. I don't know if he stands a chance. Again, it's a pretty hefty wide receiver room, and there's lots of competition in that regard as well. But I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with this group. I think there's lots of opportunities for this draft class. This could be a situation where we have, undrafted free agents who make the team and draft picks who don't, or draft picks who get sort of left to waivers and see if they survive and they end up on the practice squad, and undrafted guys who show out during the preseason and they end up on the active roster. I don't know how this is going to shake out, but they've given themselves a lot of opportunities. Like I said, they got 23 players, 23 rookies between the draft picks and their undrafted guys. So there certainly will not be a lack of opportunities for these players. Peter, any final thoughts before we close things out for this episode?
Way at the beginning, I was mentioning how the draft feels like a wedding. You look forward to it, right? You get all excited about it, and you're like, okay, cool. And then the work begins, and then you got to get to the day of the draft. It's a grind. Saturday was a grind, I'll tell you. That, like, I remember a year ago, and this is just, again, a little, another one of my stupid stories. 49ers didn't have that 7th-round pick, right? It was Elijah Mitchell, and that was it. So most of us checked out, right? I mean, I had to do the undrafted free agent tracker. Oh, poor me, right? No big deal. But oh man, that round 7, I was like, 49ers are at the end of this. I know it's moving quick, but oh, all those comp picks, I gotta wait. That was a grind. That was a long wedding, right? Yeah. And now comes the aftermath of a wedding. So you got to write all your thank you notes. So you got to write about it, break it all down. You got to figure out how you're going to cram all these gifts in, and what you got to clear out of your closet, some of the old stuff that got upgraded from your wedding gifts. What do you need to keep? What do you need to get rid of? What did you not get for your wedding? What do you need to go out there and get? And apparently a veteran cornerback like Jason Verrett is it. And that was the first thing you went down to. What do couples go? Where do they go? Bed Bath and Beyond, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah, you went down there and got Jason Verrett. So, you know what? I'm happy the draft is over, but at the same time, it just opens up so many slew of possibilities and reinforces my whole belief that, honestly, I like writing about off-season football a little bit more than I like about regular season football, because it's just, you have no idea what's going to happen. It could go in so many different directions.
This is very true. And with that metaphor, we will close out yet another episode of the Niner Noise Podcast. Thanks, as always, for listening to the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Please continue to check out ninernoise.com throughout the offseason as we continue to get your latest 49ers news and analysis to you. And be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And if you give us a review and include a question, we'll give you a shout out on air and answer your question. And of course, please share the podcast with all your fellow 49er fan friends. So until next time, let's sound the horn, 49ers.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.